WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Now we'll observe Earth Day. And again, happy Earth Day, everybody, by inviting you to participate with us in an Earth Week experiment and talking with former EPA official Judith Ank, who has devoted her post-government career to activism to reduce the amount of plastic we all consume and to point out its effects. Today, for example, she's testifying before the state legislature in Trenton to talk about some New Jersey initiatives. We'll get into those. Another news hook to this: last Thursday on the New York side, the New York City Council passed a resolution calling on the state legislature to pass the Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act. That bill aims to reduce plastic packaging by 50% over the course of 12 years. And after those 12 years, all plastics and other recyclables must be made to be at least 70% recyclable. And some of the costs of that, as far as the bill puts it, would be offset by the companies that make plastic packaging themselves. I also see the New York State Legislature is considering a ban on individually wrapped cheese slices. How about that one? Joining us now to break down these bills, why City Council is challenging the state legislature to reduce the state's plastic consumption, and to help us introduce our own second Brian Lehrer Show Plastics Challenge. We did one 5 years ago with Judith Ank, and we're going to get her take on how much has changed structurally in those 5 years. But we're going to do the same thing again in 2024. Because not enough has changed, we'll explain. Judith Ank is founder of Beyond Plastics, an initiative that works on plastic pollution issues. She's also a professor at Bennington College and former EPA Region 2 administrator, meaning she ran the Federal Environmental Protection Agency for the New York area. And Judith, also Puerto Rico, which is also in Region 2, if I remember correctly, right?
Oh, it's the best region in the country, Brian. Puerto Rico, U.S. Virgin Islands, New Jersey, New York, and 8 Indian nations in New York.
There you go. Well, welcome back to WNYC.
There's nowhere I'd rather be on Earth Day.
Aw. And you say, to jump in somewhere, that New York City has a solid waste problem, and a big chunk of that is plastics. Can you give us the scope of the plastics issue in 2024?
Well, it's a very serious problem, and it's certainly linked to climate change because plastics are made from toxic chemicals and fossil fuels. I'm really pleased that both the New York City Council and Mayor Eric Adams and New York City Comptroller Brad Lander have all endorsed this important bill in Albany to reduce packaging. And it's because waste is financially wasteful for New York City. New York City does not have an operating landfill and, thank goodness, not an operating incinerator. So New York City spends almost $500 million a year in tax dollars exporting waste to places like landfills in the beautiful Finger Lakes. New York City exports waste to a garbage incinerator in the Ironbound section of Newark, New Jersey, an environmental justice community. And we need to do everything possible to reduce the amount of waste generated in New York City, because not only is it very bad for the environment and our health, but it's also a waste of tax dollars. When I'm on the thruway going north, I almost always see a long-haul diesel truck packed with waste, making the many hundred mile trip to the Finger Lakes. that's not a good use of tax dollars.
Yeah. And I see that this bill would also phase out some of the chemicals and packaging like PFAS. And I'm going to ask you to describe that because I know more and more research is coming out about the dangers and sort of the hidden presence of these very persistent chemicals that are showing up in people's bloodstream. So it would phase out some of those chemicals and more than a dozen others. Can you tell us more about those and in general where plastics show up in the first place and why they are an issue?
Well, about 16,000 chemical additives are used in various plastics. And the bill pending in Albany by Assemblymember Deborah Glick and State Senator Pete Harcum would ban just 19 of the most toxic chemicals used in packaging. And this includes food and beverage packaging, by the way. So currently, PFAS chemicals are used in packaging, and those are known as forever chemicals because they never degrade, and they have been linked to a number of health problems ranging from testicular cancer, kidney cancer, thyroid disease, etc. And PFAS has been in the news a lot lately. It kind of came on the scene actually when I was at the EPA and Hoosick Falls, New York, a small community in upstate New York on the Vermont border, found high levels of PFAS in the drinking water. The Harcum-Glick bill would also prevent vinyl chloride PVC plastic from packaging, the worst of the worst. Heavy metals like lead, mercury, formaldehyde. I don't know about you, but I don't want any of those toxins in packaging. And so after the 19 are prohibited, then a process is set up for the state environmental agency to look at other chemicals that would be phased out in packaging.
Can you give listeners a little bit of a consumer's guide to PFAS? Because some people know about this and are already very vigilant when they go shopping. Others kind of have a vague sense of threat but don't really know what to look for. When you talk about it being included in packaging and in food and drinks, is there research that shows that this can really get from the packaging into the food, into our bloodstreams? And then B, what are some of the most common examples of foods that are packaged that way?
Sure. So PFAS is a large family of chemicals. The most commonly used are known as PFOA or PFAS. And they basically are grease resistant. So that's how they're used in packaging. So for instance, I no longer use microwavable popcorn because the inside of the bag has PFAS chemicals in it, which was, you know, very sad because I used to love microwavable popcorn. Here's the dilemma for careful shoppers. If you're a label reader, you can look up, you know, the sodium content of what you're buying, what are the various ingredients in the food and beverage, but there's no information on toxics in packaging. Nothing's going to say PFAS. Oh. Nothing's going to say lead. So I don't want to go down the road of having to label everything that's in the packaging. I just want to spend our time getting the worst toxics out of packaging.
And microwavable popcorn is an interesting example because you actually heat it in the packaging. What about things where you don't? Where you just pour it out or empty the contents, but the packaging is made with those plastics.
Yeah, unfortunately, there is some leaching of the chemicals. And also, think of with microplastics and nanoplastics, there is some shedding into the food, and the chemicals can hitchhike onto the microplastics. Definitely never, ever put anything plastic into the microwave. Heat and plastic do not belong together. But there's also the problem, there was an important study out of Columbia University and Rutgers a few months ago documenting large numbers of nanoplastics, really, really small pieces of plastic in plastic, a plastic water bottle. People often will buy bottled water because they think it's safer than tap water, which is not the case. New York City has some of the cleanest drinking water in the world. Definitely a problem if you've got lead pipes, but if you don't, you can drink New York City water with a high level of confidence. The researchers at Columbia have very sophisticated equipment in the lab. So microplastics are 5 millimeters or less, the size of a grain of salt. Nanoplastics are even smaller. They looked at 1 liter of water and found thousands of nanoplastics in that bottled water. One theory is that when you turn the cap, little bits of nanoplastics fall into the beverage. The nanoplastics and the microplastics do get into our food, and that means the chemicals can get into the food as well.
So,
and I just want to add, nothing tastes better in plastic. I've never heard anyone say, oh, this water, this beverage, this food, it tastes so good in plastic.
Yeah. So when we see products packaged in plastic, including liquids like maybe water, soda, juice, whatever, and they say, no, I'm trying to remember what the particular plastic is.
No BPA.
That's it, BPA. No BPA. We should look past that and say, okay, no BPA, but it doesn't say one way or another about these thousands of other microplastics. Is that kind of the takeaway here?
Yes. And it's, you know, as careful as a consumer as you are, it's virtually impossible to avoid plastics and all of the chemicals that go with plastics. And that's why we are really pushing for systemic change. So New Yorkers and people from other states can shop confidently and know that there are no PFAS chemicals in the packaging, that there's no lead or mercury in the packaging. There's only so much you can do as an individual to avoid plastics. You know, there are some things you can do. But we need new laws and strong enforcement of those laws to protect our health and our environment.
Judith Enck, founder of Beyond Plastics, an initiative that works on plastic pollution issues, with us here on Earth Day. We'll introduce our plastics challenge for Brian Lehrer Show listeners in just a second and take your calls on round one of your reporting on your own use of single-use plastics. By way of preview, we will have your report back on Friday after you monitor your use of single-use plastics over the course of this week, and we'll have Judith help set that up in a minute. But let me stay on the legislation. On the New York side, and we'll get to Trenton, but on the New York side, one of the aims of the bill that you started out discussing is to put at least some of the onus of the packaging fee to be paid by companies. As far as you know, how will that assessment be made? Who's going to have to pay for what? Like, will a cereal brand have to pay a fee for the plastic liner in each box, or produce companies have to pay for those individually wrapped cucumbers, or how might that work?
Yes, you got it. Right now, you and I as taxpayers pay to get rid of all of this excess packaging. And so the Harcum-Glick bill includes something called an eco-modulated fee. So if you have no packaging, so if you're just selling the cucumber without a plastic wrap, you don't pay a fee. But if you're selling the cucumber with a plastic wrap and that is not recyclable, you will pay a higher fee. So no fee if you've eliminated the packaging or if it's refillable or reusable. Modest fee if it's recyclable. High fee if you can't recycle it at all. Because right now, these companies have no skin in the game. They sell us the product, and then it's up to us as taxpayers to either burn or bury it at a landfill or incinerator or recycle it. So we're shifting the economic responsibility. But we also know that fees alone do not drive change in the packaging world. So there's also a very specific requirement that plastic packaging be reduced gradually over the next 12 years, eventually getting to 50% reduction in packaging. And we think this is going to prompt innovation in the packaging world. You know, companies like Amazon and others they seem pretty innovative. They seem to be able to get you a package in record time. We want to make sure that the package is not adding to the environmental burden that it currently is.
Honestly, Judith, I can't even believe we're still having the producer pays discussion. For as long as I've been covering environmental issues, this has been one of the agenda items that just seems to make so much common sense, but I guess has never been implemented in any kind of widespread way in public policy for all kinds of things that we have to throw out, whether it's the packaging around items. It's largely about packaging around the items we buy and sometimes other things that because we pay for disposal, the payment for that should not fall on the consumer, should not fall on the city or other local government that, you know, hires the sanitation workers. The burden for that should be paid for by the producers. And yes, that's going to increase the cost of things, but it means when you buy something that has a disposal cost, that you're helping to pay for that. And that's kind of a more holistic way to price anything. But it just hasn't made it through legislatures, has it?
No, and fiscal conservatives should like this approach. And it makes sense because it's the producers that decide what products are packaged in. It's not, you know, an environmental regulator. It's Kraft Foods, it's McDonald's, it's Amazon, etc. And what they've been doing for years is, quite frankly, lying to the public and saying, don't worry about all of this packaging. If it's plastic packaging, we can just recycle it, they say. But there's only a 5-6% recycling rate in this country. Mm-hmm. Plastics are fundamentally not recyclable. So we are finally seeing the truth come out and people recognizing that most plastics don't get recycled. A lot of it is exported to other countries that don't have the infrastructure to handle it. So it's really, really important for producer responsibility, but they've gotten a free ride and they have a lot of lobbyists in Albany. So they are working ferociously to block this important bill. And we only have until June 6th when the legislature adjourns to try to get it adopted in Albany.
And interesting that you mentioned Kraft as an example, because it reminds me of the other thing I wanted to ask you about regarding a bill in the New York State Legislature and a classic Kraft product. Kraft American cheese slices, individually wrapped. And now there's a bill that would ban individually wrapped cheese slices per se. You familiar with that?
Well, it's not a separate bill. It's Kraft going after this broader Packaging Reduction and Recycling Infrastructure Act. And the first thing I want to say is it really cheese, those individually wrapped in plastic? It's a lot of oil as opposed to dairy product. And I know we're making a little bit of progress when the New York Post starts publishing inaccurate information. They are focused this morning on the individually wrapped cheese example. And I talked to them on Friday and I said, you know, it wasn't long ago that we could have sliced cheese that was not encased in plastic. And if you really need that little separation between the sliced cheeses, you can use wax paper or some kind of paper product. And they've latched on to the cheese example, and it's just a teeny tiny part of this debate. But it's entirely possible to have cheese that's not encased in plastic, just like it's possible to buy lettuce that doesn't come in those plastic coffins. Oh, it wasn't long ago you would just buy a head of lettuce.
I didn't even know they still make individually wrapped cheese food slices, but I guess they do. That just reflects my own eating habits. I know after you leave us in a few minutes, you're going to get ready to go testify in Trenton about a plastics-related bill. What's happening on the New Jersey side?
Well, in Trenton, the chair of the Environmental Committee, Senator Bob Smith, who has a long and effective career on environmental protection, is starting to tackle the plastics issue. And he's convening a hearing this morning on plastics and health. I'm going to be talking about how microplastics have been found in air, in drinking water. And unfortunately, we now have peer-reviewed science documenting the presence of microplastics in human blood, lungs, breast milk, the human placenta, both the fetal side and the maternal side. And last month, the New England Journal of Medicine published an article documenting the presence of microplastics in the human heart, and specifically found that the microplastics were attached to plaque in your heart, and it increased the incidence of heart attack, stroke, and premature death. So Senator Smith wants to do a detailed discussion about plastics and health. We'll deal with those direct issues of plastics in our body. And I'm also going to broaden the conversation to talk about plastics and climate change, because climate change obviously is a health issue. And plastic production is plan B for the fossil fuel industry. Little mom and pop companies like ExxonMobil and Shell are building gigantic plastic production plants called ethane cracker facilities, where they produce the little tiny nurdles, they're called, little tiny marbles of plastic to be sent all over the world. And it's because the fossil fuel companies know that we're finally making a shift away from using so much fossil fuel for electricity generation and transportation. We're finally seeing more renewable energy projects, more electric vehicles. And so they have shifted to plastic production as their growth area, which means more climate change.
And to wrap this up, we're going to ask you to introduce and help tell people how they can participate in the 5th anniversary Brian Lehrer Show Plastics Challenge. We first did this 5 years ago in 2019 with you, Judith, as you recall. I know you're going to come back on Friday at the end of this and help debrief it, but we really appreciate that you, with all your knowledge about plastics, have been a part of this. And as a reminder to listeners, here's what we're doing. It's an Earth Week challenge that we'll all try to participate in. I'm going to do it. I hope everybody listening right now will do it. It should be easy. It's just to notice and keep a little log of, even if it's just a mental log, the single-use plastics we encounter in 1 week, really just 4 days, one business week, Monday through Friday this week. Listeners, you can keep a log in your head. You can keep a log by writing them down, or even physically hold on to each piece of plastic as kind of a souvenir. Maybe you'll take a photograph or two and submit them to us, or somehow describe how the individual use plastics, single-use plastics that you use in your life, kind of tend to pile up one by one without quite noticing it most of the time. So Judith, tell people what they're likely to encounter if they start noticing the single-use plastics in their lives. What are the most common ones?
Well, what I urge people to do is what you just said. Look at what you're using the most of. You know, don't get too fixated on the condiment, the ketchup bottle, unless you're using like ketchup every day. But look at what's most prevalent in your consumer habits. Reusable shopping bags. Look at your use of plastic utensils for takeout food. If you stop at a coffee shop every day, are you getting a single-use coffee cup, or can you bring your own cup to the coffee shop? If you're a parent or a grandparent, take a close look at the baby food aisle in the supermarket. It used to be little glass jars of baby food. Now it is dominated by non-recyclable pouches of plastic, ironically, often with organic food in it. So I urge people, you know, you're not going to be perfect. You can be the imperfect environmentalist. And you can look at what you're using the most and are there reusable, refillable alternatives. You know, there are some soap products, for instance, that are important. I never, ever, ever buy plastic pods for the dishwasher or the washing machine, because those pods, like, you feel it in your hand and you're like, oh, is this like a little plastic skin on the soap? It is. And it contains polyvinyl alcohol polymer, PVA plastic. In fact, there's a bill in the New York City Council by Councilmember Gennaro to prohibit that plastic pod covering. So definitely.
And so does that wind up on your dishes, on your sparkling clean dishes?
Well, yeah, possibly. And also it goes down the drain. And so you've got microplastics going into the sewer system. So even if you're using, you know, a kind of an eco-friendly product, if it's the plastic pod, it's a problem. And my guess is people are using a lot of pods because we all have to do laundry and wash our dishes. I just use powder with no plastic covering at all. So take a look at what you're mostly using. And particularly, I didn't give you a lot of examples here, but your food and your beverages. And for goodness sakes, never, ever put any plastic packaging into the microwave, which, you know, if you go to the frozen food section of the supermarket, there's lots of food that's frozen, and they recommend that you put it in the microwave to be served. And remember when we used to do that and you kind of tasted the plastic in the food?
Ew.
That's a telltale sign that it's a problem.
And just before you go, last question before we open up the phones for kind of the pretest, part one of people's reporting on single-use plastics in their lives. Have we made progress at a policy level or just a consumer behavior level over the last 5 years since you and I first did this together in 2019?
Yes, we have made progress, but not enough. New York City has adopted something called Skip the Stuff. So when you order takeout food, you're not automatically given all of the utensils and condiments and straws. New York State, following the lead of New York City, has banned polystyrene foam packaging for restaurant food. We do have a plastic bag ban in effect in New York and New Jersey, although I will say that the New York State Department of Environmental Conservation and the Attorney General's office need to do a much better job enforcing it in New York City. And if we can pass the Glick-Harkin bill in Albany this year, that will be the most comprehensive plastic packaging reduction law in the country. So all eyes are in Albany for the next 6 weeks.
And Judith Enck, thank you for joining us from our other local state capital, Trenton. Judith Enck is founder of Beyond Plastics, an initiative that works on plastic pollution issues. She's also a professor at Bennington College and the former EPA Region 2 administrator, which covers New York and other places, as we said at the beginning of the segment. Thanks so much for coming on and helping us launch our 2024 Brian Larochelle Plastics Challenge. We'll talk to you again to debrief on Friday.
Sounds great. Thanks for doing this.
Judith Enck on both the New York and New Jersey sides with her work today, as you've been hearing. And now, listeners, we invite you to call in and help launch our fifth anniversary Earth Week experiment, our Brian Larochelle Plastics Challenge. A lot of people are already calling in, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We'll take a few minutes of calls today just to get some examples on the table, and then we'll do a longer call-in segment when Judith comes back on Friday. And you get the idea that we laid out, that the challenge itself is just to notice how many times you encounter single-use plastics between now and Friday, and which ones you think would be the easiest or hardest to avoid. Judith gave some common examples. So we'll take a few calls right now from those of you already paying attention to this. Call in and just name one or a few of the single-use plastics that you either can't avoid or successfully avoid in your life already. and anything you have changed personally at any time or have trouble changing. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. Megan in Williamsburg, you're on WNYC. Hello, Megan. What you got?
So I obviously, like everyone else, noticed every trip to the grocery store, I was bringing everything home in plastic, whether it's vegetables, even broccoli sometimes wrapped in plastic, tofu, my grains, you can get rice in plastic. So everything's in a ton of packaging. And Mason Jar in Greenpoint is a refillery where you just bring back, it's a grocer and refillery, you bring back your jars, whether it's your shampoo, your unused or used up shampoo bottle, and you can go and you can just refill everything from toothpaste to grains to beans. So it's been really amazing. Mm-hmm. And good, better for the environment.
So a problem where you encounter it and a good Brooklyn tip. Megan, thank you very much. Jeanette in Manhattan, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jeanette.
Hi, Brian. I notice every day the plastics from vitamins and prescriptions. I recently bought from Procter & Gamble Align Probiotics, and it was in a large box, number one. I open up the box. The box only had the container, which was like half the size of the box. Open up the 28 capsules, which was only filled halfway. Every prescription I get from CVS or Duane Reade has these huge bottles. I had like four pills in this huge bottle. What do you do with the plastic bottle afterwards? You throw it away. CVS or Duane Reade, whatever anybody gets their prescription from, should have some sort of recycling, I think. The same thing with Procter Gamble and all these other companies making vitamins and only filling the bottle halfway full. That's ridiculous. Something has to be done about that.
Yeah, those are really good examples. Do look on the bottom of those for the recycling insignias with a recycling number. Some of them are recyclable, so at least there's that, even though Judith was talking about the limits of recycling and what it actually accomplishes with respect to plastics. But do check for those. But that's a good idea about the stores taking them back. I know some electronic stores, Staples, others will take back electronics for recycling when you're done with them. And maybe that should be part of the legislative push, too, to make pharmacies take back those bottles that you were discussing. Thank you for that. Adam in North Bergen, you're on WNYC. Adam, can you hear me?
Hi. Yes, I can. I just wanted to ask the professor. My family has a supermarket here, and we used to use plastic bags. Now we use those cloth bags. I was wondering if there has to be changes more on the national level where big institutions stop using plastics, or do you think there would be any effect really on a consumer level? Because we sent $20 billion to Israel to commit a genocide, and we're not doing anything about plastic. You know, there should be legislation on that.
Adam, thank you very much. Managed to get a Gaza reference in there, I think. Whatever side people are on of that or what words they choose to use or not use, we acknowledge. But national legislation, tough to get on something like that. And Judith and I were talking off the air about the plastic bag bans and what's replacing them. And she said her impression is that, yes, a lot of people really are bringing our own cloth bags and other bags to go shopping with now. But we were discussing how a lot of places will still sell very cheap. Like one of my local supermarkets, I noticed they'll sell little bags that look like they're cloth, but they're really plastic at checkout for 25 cents. So for a lot of people who don't bring their own bags and think, oh, a quarter, what's the big deal? If I know I can do this, maybe I'll just spend the quarter each time. And I thought those particular bags at this particular supermarket were very thin cloth and said, no, those are plastic too. So just a little anecdote on that. How about Robin Randolph? You're on WNYC. Hi, Rob.
Good morning, Brian. I'm sitting here in my car with my single-use Dunkin' Donuts coffee cup and plastic straw and listen to the program. And one thing that Professor Enk said that really threw a chill through me was the not using plastic inside the microwave. And I buy these green beans that are come in a, you know, in a heat-in bag.
Right.
I'm wondering how bad, you know, how bad that really is, and how much damage I'm doing to my health and the health of my family.
Yeah, and I don't want to be pretend to be more of a science expert than I am, and Judith had to go for her testimony in Trenton, but it's, you know, she raised the category. She raised the alarm on that category. So I think, Rob, you should just look into it more. Start Googling it and see about those kinds of vegetables that are steam-in-the-bag vegetables, very common these days, and see what science so far has to say about the microplastics in those and how much they can get into your food. A good thing for everybody to do under these circumstances and with more science on that kind of thing coming out. One more. Jack in Astoria, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jack.
Hey, Brian. I'm calling about the single-use, heavy-duty plastic containers that have the detergents come in, that they're so toxic. They're made by who God knows who with hundreds of chemicals. And my suggestion is to have a dispenser in the supermarkets where you would go and bring back your container, fill it up with however much detergent you want, and it would reduce and maybe eliminate the manufacturing of these heavy-duty plastic containers.
Good suggestion. Jack, thank you very much. All right, listeners, there's a little sampling. And now we invite you to notice all this week, from now until Friday show, the single-use plastics that you encounter in your life. Just from that little sampling of phone callers, we had people who've been noticing this for a long time and are super conscious of it. We had a few who just kind of, as we heard in our second to last caller, for example, on the microwavable coffee and vegetables, never thought about it quite like this before. And Judith Eng put some maybe fear in them, or at least a little more consciousness. So take that consciousness, folks. Notice your single plastics use between now and Friday. Judith's going to come back on Friday's show and take your calls on what you have noticed that you may not have realized before the second, fifth anniversary, because we did it in 2019, Brian Lehrer Show Plastics Challenge. So go forth and log your plastics.